Check out our website at www.thefantasyamateurs.com.
On this edition of the Nasty Cast, we welcome a trio of analysts to the show to talk Dynasty Baseball. Tim McLeod, Jim Finch, and Nick Duran all discuss their own Dynasty strategies, as well as players they target in the Dynasty format and players they are avoiding. What is this, a Fantasy Baseball podcast?
Yes!
That's all we talk about on this podcast is interesting things. Jesse, go toss a potato.
Here lies Joe. He died wearing braces.
Be interesting when she has her heavy flow at times.
It's not Nick Nolte.
That damn dirty ape.
You're going to blow Arkansas?
The Hindenburger cheese.
We follow the golden rule.
I'm in a league with the Pope.
Could have been an accountant.
Replace the baseballs with hand grenades.
Thor, he's like Jesus, but for people from Norway.
Eating ain't cheating.
To episode 99 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by thefantasyamateurs.com as well as the Owner's Box app. I always forget to mention that. Anyway, I'm Nathan Dockin. You can find me on Twitter, actually. We'll get to that first. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dockin. I'm joined today. I'm thrown off because Joe's not here, but I am joined by, of course, intrepid producer Jesse Jordan. What's up, Jesse?
Hey-o.
Thank you.
I'm here. What's up?
Thank you for that. It's good. The people haven't heard your voice for a while. So.
Oh, yeah. Just letting them know. I wanted to make sure that I really kind of wanted to come in with the Creed bomb this year, but I'll save that for, you know, a surprise.
Well, it's not a surprise anymore.
Well, you'll never know when I'm going to do it.
Okay. Fair enough.
And I'll never tell. There you go. Maybe Tim will Creed bomb.
Maybe he will. Oh, wait, spoil the guest, as if people
oh,
didn't
man.
Know. As if God, people didn't know from reading the episode description.
I ruined two surprises.
We are also joined today by a man who likes his mock drafts just how he likes his molasses in January. Slow. Tim McLeod, welcome back to the Nasty Cast.
Well, thanks so much for having me back, guys. It's always a pleasure talking with my fellow frozen drafters in Bismarck. It doesn't get any better, does it?
Oh, God. It has been the official winter from hell.
Oh, big time, big time. I saw a dog today, okay? Stuck to a fire hydrant. That's just not right. It is not right, you
oh,
guys.
Man, did you pee on him to get him free?
Hey, come on. Is this turning into a political show here? Or what?
Yeah, just call Donald Trump.
Exactly. Oh. Yes, it trumps yeah. Everything, guys. Sorry, that's the best I could do.
I had a comment to go with that, but there's no point anymore. I've been trumped.
Yes, we are showered in jokes already. We're off to a rip roaring start.
Golden, guys, it's golden.
Oh, jeez. Oh man. Oh, God. Well, Tim, I'm glad you could join us. And, of course, Joe, believe it or not, as cold as it is, Joe's at a freaking hockey game right now. I scheduled these interviews for tonight, and then I'm like, Joe, we're going to talk to Tim Friday at 7. He's like, oh, great, I'll be at a hockey game. Oh, good.
Wow, man, nice to know where his priorities are at, eh? He's like calling all the way from Canada, and he's, you know, watching some hockey game or something. Oh, man. Disappointing.
Yeah, we got you standing outside in the frigid cold. The only payphone left in existence. You threw your quarters in there, calling over the border. Just no respect.
I tell you. No, none whatsoever. And, you know, it's hard to find the right payphone up here and the booth to go along with it, guys. It's tough.
Well, at least you have the booth.
Well, hey, come on. Hey, we're not into advanced technology like you folks.
No. Yeah, we're light years ahead, and we know that the Trump loves his technology too. We're going to stop talking about him though. Let's talk about some baseball instead. We're going to touch on some transactions that have occurred very recently. In fact, a mere 30 minutes or so after Joe and I finished recording episode 98, we had a couple trades. First of all, well, I guess we'll start us off with Malik Smith and Shea Simmons going to the Mariners in exchange for Luis Gohara and Thomas Burrows. So I guess we'll touch on that real quickly. Not so much the Malik Smith, because he was immediately flipped. But I wanted to get your thoughts, if you have any, Tim, on Luis Gohara going to the Braves.
Well, hey, the Braves just continue to stockpile young arms. I saw him in Arizona. Kid looked great. There's been some rumors, concerns about the shoulder wear and tear and et cetera, but, you know, hey, he's a young starter, and I like what Atlanta's doing. I think they're going to have one heck of a team in a few years.
Absolutely. I just traded for Gohara myself in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League. Again, you said, you know, with injury concerns perhaps, but I mean, you got to love the upside with him. We're going to then go back to Malik Smith, who I mentioned was traded to the Mariners. He was there very briefly before he was dealt again, along with Carlos Vargas and Ryan Yarbrough, to the Rays in exchange for Drew Smyly. So I guess before we get to Smyly, who's clearly the headliner amongst all these players, Malik Smith, what are your thoughts on Smith, Tim?
Well, you know, how do you spell his first name? Is it M-A-A-L-O-X?
Does he give you a heartburn?
Well, I was going to say, I think you're going to need something for the indigestion. At least I think owners that are expecting big things from him right off the bat are, you know, you look at Tampa Bay. They get Kiermaier in center. All world. He ain't going nowhere. Then you got Souza, then you got Dickerson, then you got Franklin, then you got Matuk, and then you've got Malik Smith at Triple A, because Tampa Bay plays the clock game. And I really don't see, especially early on, the Rays finding a home for the kid. So, you know, I'm hearing numbers. People are thinking, well, you know, 25, 35, 45 stolen bases. And I totally agree, but they're all going to be at Triple A, guys.
Yeah. Oh, man. that's harsh. No, that's true. I am not expecting too much from either. Even in the long term, I mean, his stock is really down right now. I think I read that didn't he get kicked off of a winter ball team?
Well, yeah, he had an injury and he was let go from a Mexican league team. I believe at the time he was batting about half his weight, about 105. Who knows? You know, he is dealing with I believe it's a quad injury, but. I just don't see Tampa Bay, especially with their history of playing the clock. I just don't see them doing anything other than starting him in the minors. And, you know, hey, there's a lot of moving parts in Tampa Bay, and I wouldn't hold a whole lot of faith in him being a huge contributor to your fantasy team this year, guys.
Yep, totally agree. That's one of the reasons that I tend to avoid Rays position prospects, at least, in dynasty leagues. It just seems like you're waiting on those guys forever. I don't know why. I always seem to get suckered in by their pitching, though. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. Let's talk about Drew Smyly real quick. Does the venue change affect your outlook for him at all?
Well, I think getting out of the AL East has got to help. You look at the offense in that division, and there's some big boppers and some very, very strongs in the AL East. I think that's a positive. But he was a fair bit more hittable last year, and I like the trade from Seattle's perspective. I think they're getting themselves an arm that could possibly be a good, solid number three. And for what they gave up, I like it. Whether or not Smyly rebounds and gets that ERA down into the three mid threes, that leaves to be seen. But, if you can draft him as a 4-5, I think there is some potential for upside there, guys.
Yeah, it really is a shame that Joe couldn't be with us today, because he is as big a Drew Smyly fan as you will find. And I haven't been too antagonistic on him, to be perfectly honest. He was irrational for Smyly last year, and of course he was grossly disappointed. The only reason that I was out on him is just because of the injury history, but he actually managed to throw 175 innings last year, make 30 starts, and just gave up a ton of home runs.
you know, but I still am not totally out on him. Like you said, if you can, I mean, you're not going to have to pay much of a price at all for him. So he could be a deeper league guy that you can target pretty late and could, I mean, we've seen him before be very, very effective. So I would not be surprised to see a nice bounce back from maybe just a change of scenery will do him good, get a little bit of different coaching, see if they can find out, you know, whatever is ailing him and try and get him fixed a little bit. Perhaps a guy that you like a little more, or maybe a lot less, Tyson Ross, who had thoracic outlet syndrome. Basically, I think he pitched 6 innings all of last year, and he missed the rest of the season. Tyson Ross is signed with the Rangers of Texas. So, Tim, any thoughts on Tyson Ross going to Texas?
Not very good ones, but yeah, I do have some thoughts. You know, when you look at what's, you know, you're tossing darts. When you look at the injury history for the injury that he's coming off of, you know, the results aren't overly good. Texas as a park, I think if you want to toss a late round dart his way, fine, but I'm not moving him up my draft boards at all. He's purely a speculative late round pick for me.
I mean, it's hard to get too excited for him. I guess it's hard to say. I was going to ask you sort of how late it would have to be for you to target him in a dynasty league. But it's, I mean, it would have to be just really late, right? I mean, and if it's the 30th round, are you in on him?
If the draft starts at 8, it's got to be after 10. How's that?
Okay. Yep. That says a
definitely
lot.
Definitely late. Definitely late, guys. You're purely throwing darts as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, hey, there could be value there. But there's a lot of pitchers you can look at late that I would definitely turn to before I turn to Tyson Ross.
It would be interesting to see if somebody wants to convert him into a reliever, since he's sort of a two-pitch pitcher anyway. Fastball, slider, you know, 40-plus percent slider usage basically throughout his career. So, you know, if they wanted to sort of mitigate the injuries, that might be something to look at down the road. But for fantasy purposes, he's an ignore from me right now.
Well, and you take a look at Texas, you know, from their perspective, it's not a bad gamble when you look at the rest of their rotation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, as far as what Texas is doing, I like it. Texas has got a dynamite offense. The pitching after Darvish and Hamels, a little bit lacking. So I think it's a good gamble, but I'm not going to pay the same price that the Rangers are paying.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that it's a great real-life gamble. I was actually hoping that the Twins would do it just to see what you get. I mean, it depends on – I haven't seen what the contract is yet. It was just announced that he signed, so I haven't seen a number yet. But, you know, depending on how expensive he was, even for a rebuilding club, like, you know, if you get him, he gets back to full health, that's a heck of a trade chip. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, but the Twins are all in on Jose Bautista, though, aren't they, Nathan?
Oh, man, yeah. I'm afraid not. I doubt that very much, although that would be pretty nice. That would sell some jerseys at the very least and perhaps put some butts in the seats, but I don't see that happening. Let's see. Let's get into the Dynasty League stuff, shall we?
Yeah, sounds like a plan to me.
All right, we had this fancy-dancy Dynasty League mock draft that we did. It was 15 teams. We used batting or on base, rather, instead of batting average, and we went with quality starts instead of wins, because wins are the worst stat in fantasy baseball or any fantasy sport as far as I'm concerned. Where should we start here, Tim? Let's just let's roll through your roster, shall we?
Yeah, sounds good.
I'll pick your team apart. Let me find you here. Actually,
I'm probably at the top of the list based on the quality of the team. That would be my guess until you shatter all my dreams in about 15 seconds.
Yeah, no. Sadly, I looked over your roster before, and you won't get too many dissenting opinions from me as far as the guys that you took. You started off. You had the sixth slot. You had Paul Goldschmidt is who you took off the board there, and so you backed that up with Charlie Blackmon in the second round, and then Addison Russell in the third round. But probably one of my favorite picks in the entire draft, to be perfectly honest, the 55th overall pick in the fourth round, you took Yu Darvish. And we know that you're a fan of the Asian players, and it is no surprise then that you decided to take Darvish. But do you, like, how good do you think that he will be moving forward? Are we talking a top 10 starting pitcher, top 5 maybe?
I think definitely top 10. Well, when you look at the at what he did last year coming back from Tommy John, he looked good. Sure, he had some moments where it was obvious he was knocking the rust off, but I think when you look at starting pitchers, he's one of only a handful out there that have the potential for 250-plus strikeouts, and I think we're going to see it this year. So I'm liking where I'm buying him early, but I have my druthers as to whether or not I'll get him there once we start heading into the real deal. I think he's going to move a little bit upwards on the draft charts, guys.
Oh, if he doesn't, he's going to be on every single one of my teams this year, without a doubt, and I suppose yours as well.
Yeah, he's definitely a target. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, just about 12 strikeouts per nine in his 100 innings last year. With also, mind you, the best walk rate of his career. Talk about, you know, they always say something that, or the one thing that, you know, is usually the last to return to the Tommy John pitchers is your command. And he had the best walk rate of his career. So, there's nothing.
Plus he said, he's staying away from the WBC, which bodes well. You know, that is also, as far as I'm concerned, a real plus. Ah. Because you don't want him going out there half a season removed from TJ, taking that sort of a risk in March. So I think that's a smart move, and it'll hold well for him, I think, as the season moves along.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of extra innings to pile up, so... we're not going to go too far with your next pick. I want to talk about was Wilson Contreras in the fifth round. Again, I like that a lot. So as far as catchers go, where would you rank him amongst catchers heading into the 2017 season?
I believe right now I have him ranked fourth, Nathan. I like the potential big time. And one of the goals when I was drafting this team and putting it together is I'm always playing for now. Okay, I want to win the first year. Okay, you know, that flags wave forever, yada, yada, yada. But it's nice to get out of the gate. It's strong. And when I look at Contreras, I think he's going to be a really good catcher for a long time. And I paired him up a little bit later with Jacob Realmuto, and I think that gives me a real solid 1-2 punch coming out of the catcher slot.
I like that a lot. A lot. usually I'm not one to move early on a second catcher, but when you can get that kind of floor, I can't argue against it. Those two guys are going to be catchers, you know, first catchers, I think, this coming year. And obviously they're both really young, so you got to project them to be in that same territory for quite some time. So you went Jason Kipnis in the sixth round, Julio Urias in the seventh. Kevin Gausman has long been a favorite of both mine and Joe, so it's good to see him find a home in the eighth round at pick 115. Edwin Diaz, I think, is going to be...
Nate, I'd like...
What?
I'd like to interrupt for a second.
How dare you?
Well, you didn't include my name because I'm a Kevin Gausman believer too. So I was going to see if what Tim's thoughts were on Gausman. Is this the? I probably ask this every year that we've had this podcast. Is this finally the year that he puts it together, or is this kind of was a good spot to take him?
I think what we saw last year is a good spot to build upon, but I think there's more to come, and I think there's better to come. And yeah, he's at the right age where I'm expecting him to come the end of the season to be ranked just a tad higher going into 2018 than he was 2017, guys.
Sorry to short you there, Jesse.
Oh, no problem. It was. I just wanted to, I didn't talk fast enough. I thought you were actually leading the way you were talking. I thought you were leading into asking him about it. And then you threw out another name before I could get in. So not
that's
a problem.
Like one of, that's like one of those segue sort of things, eh?
Yeah. It's one of those things that you get on and drive around town, right?
Yeah. Two wheeler with skis up here, guys.
Yeah. I have a hell of a time like turning left. I just have to go straight. No matter where you're at, just line it up where I want to go, step on and go.
So put your passport in your pocket and we'll see you next week sometime.
Well, I was planning on driving right up to Edwin Diaz.
Oh, Edwin Diaz. Yeah, you got the kid. I'm a big fan, and I'm going to strive to own Edwin Diaz in every league I'm playing in this year. Him and Roberto Osuna. I like both. They're not looking over their shoulder. The job's secure. The stuff is filthy. I have a man crush on Edwin Diaz.
Again, 100% with you. I would be perfectly fine with him being my number one closer in every single league. My God, over a 15K per nine last year. I mean, his stuff is just absolutely disgusting. 2.79 ERA, but his FIP was 2.04. You know, so you could even say, I mean, with relievers, you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt anyway. But you can say that he got unlucky in those 51 and two-thirds innings. And then
plus on top of that, he's going to be stronger this year. He wore down a little bit at the end last year, but I'm expecting bigger and better things heading into 2017. And I don't know how much bigger and better they get when you look at that K rate, Nathan.
Oh, that's sexy time. That strikeout rate, that is sexy time for sure. And speaking of sexy time, Kevin Kiermaier, he's going to be one of my sleepers this year. Hopefully you don't talk about him. You got to stop talking about him on your podcast, Tim. You keep raising his draft stock. He was going to – I think it was July or August last year. I was already saying, oh, he's going to be a 2017 sleeper of mine because I saw that the changes that he made in the second half, he really started stealing a lot of bases, and he was just on fire in the second half. So I guess, you know, you're on the same page as me, obviously, with Kiermaier.
Very much so. And the reason I pimp him up as much as I can is because I own him in all my dynasty leagues, and I don't care, really, okay? Everybody can pay the price for him. I got him cheap, okay? Sorry, it's a little bit lecherous on my behalf, but, hey, you know, underneath this mild-mannered Canadian facade, there is a lecherous sort of guy lurking, Nathan.
Oh, my God. That's so, yeah, you're just talking up all the guys that you own in all your leagues then, huh? Inflate the trade value.
Well, exactly. I'm anticipating Kiermaier and Diaz for Mike Trout any day now. Sound fair?
Yeah, I'm on board. You got me suckered in for sure.
Okay, well, hey, we got to get into a league together. That's a big well, we're going to talk about that hopefully a little later. But I really like Kiermaier. The glove will keep him in the game, and the what we saw last year in half a season, you know, you start extrapolating that over a full season, then you could be looking at, 15 home runs, 35 stolen bases, not an outstanding average OBP, but good enough to get it done. And, you know, when you look at stolen bases, you look at five category guys, there's not a whole lot of them out there. So, I definitely love Kiermaier, and I'm gonna own them all over the place, assuming you don't scoop me first.
I just might. We'll have to see. But Craig Kimbrel, the next guy off the board, his numbers have begun to decline a little bit, but I still don't mind in the 12th round getting him. I mean, that's definitely a far cry from where you've been drafting him in the past years. But then Daniel Norris, I wanted to touch on because I am wondering, is this the year that we see the big Daniel Norris breakout?
I'm betting on it all over the place. You look at what he did in September. You know, the strikeout rates were up there. I believe he pitched to an ERA somewhere in the mid-2s. You're talking about a kid that's gone through a really tough time with the thyroid issue. He hasn't been healthy. We finally saw, I think, in September, we can expect to see even more of heading into 2017. So, Daniel Norris, another personal favorite, and I'm definitely in buy mode.
Totally agreed. I'm trying to get him every dynasty league that I can grab him in. He's got a great combination of youth and upside. Plus, of course, being a lefty myself, I got to try to acquire all the left-handed pitchers that I can.
A lot of people forget Norris. He's only 24 years old. That's not exactly over the hill, is it?
Not quite. Certainly not by any of our standards here on the podcast. So let's shoot down a little bit farther down your team. Let's talk about Mitch Haniger, who has found himself a new home. So he's been a guy that I haven't been too excited about in the past. So try and talk me into Mitch Haniger, Tim.
Well, I think he's got the job. We're talking 20 plus home run potential, and The key there for me was the opportunity. When you can get a situation where, you know, the Mariners obviously liked him, they traded for him. Take a look. Have you taken a look at the Mariners outfield?
It's not great.
Yeah. There's opportunity there. Yeah. And, you know, obviously they liked Haniger to bring him into the fold. And with that home run potential, I think when you start looking really late, he's a guy that you should be targeting, because I believe the opportunity to get in those bats will be there. And that's the key.
Yeah, opportunity is the first step, and he should have a pretty big one. So let's talk about some of the more interesting picks that you made. And I mentioned before with you, Darvish, that you follow the Asian leagues quite a bit, and we've got some guy named Tetsuto Yamada and, Jae-Hyun Hwan, Sho Nakata. Who are these guys, Tim? Let us know.
Who are these guys? Well, I got scooped on Ohtani, okay? That was almost rude. I was looking at that and saying, you know, come on, Ohtani should be mine. And I got scooped on him. But, yeah, somebody obviously, I think it was one of the guys that listens to the podcast that scooped me.
I think it was our buddy Barry Baker.
Yeah, well, yeah, Barry. Yeah, okay, yeah. You had to bring a guy in from England or whatever to scoop me on a Japanese player. Okay, now that hurts.
Yep.
But, no, you look at Yamada, okay? He's heading into his age 25 season, okay? In 2015, 38 homers, 100 RBIs, 34 stolen bases. Last year, 38 homers, 102 RBIs, 30 stolen bases. 1026 ops in 2015, 1032 last year. He is, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I believe, the best hitter not plying his trade in Major League Baseball today. And an amazing talent. The past 2 years, we're talking about a guy who's been caught stealing six times with 64 successful stolen bases. He's just an incredible talent. And at this point in time, he has been rather non-committal as far as his future is concerned. But non-committal can change. I'm real interested in a hurry. So I like Yamada big time.
Very nice. So Ohtani is supposedly coming over next year, right?
Well, Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred have sort of made a mess of that whole situation. Because of his age, he falls into the new agreement where you're looking at, I believe the most you can offer him is $5 million. If that is in fact the case, we will not see Shohei Ohtani at all. If he was a free agent today, open bidding, I think you'd be looking at probably $175 million over 6 years. He ain't going to settle for a $5 million deal. There's no way. You know, it's just not going to happen. Last year, 140 innings pitched. He allowed 89 hits, 45 walks, 174 Ks. He's allowed 22 home runs in his entire career in Japan. That's in 517 innings pitched.
Jeez.
Ohtani is, if I had to rank him right now on a major league ranking, say for starting pitching, I would slide him easily right now as a top 15 pitcher. And on top of that, last year he decided to play two both ways, and he had 22 homers, drove in 67, stole seven bases, and put together a 10.04 ops. So just a once in a generation type player, guys.
Man, that is awesome. I really hope that we get to see him stateside sooner than later. Let's see. This sounds like, I mean, something that I ordered from, you know, takeout the other night. Jae-Hyun Hwan?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Well, yeah, it's not quite as good as Egg Foo Young, but it's close second, guys.
I think so.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a Korean third baseman who's currently a free agent, looking, I believe the Giants are interested right now. At least that's the rumor. The kid's got some skills. He's a little bit older. The big thing that impressed me was he really changed his game last year in Korea and started focusing a little bit more on his on-base skills, and his walk rates shot through the roof. He's got decent speed, decent power. I think we're going to see him as a, to start at least anyways, as a utility type infielder, assuming he signs. And I think he will. So just a name to keep to keep etched into your kitchen table or whatever table you happen to own, and see where he settles in and go from there.
Very nice. How about Sho Nakata? That's an easy one.
Yeah, that's real easy. He's 28 now. A little bit of a veteran player. He's expressed an interest in heading to Major League Baseball at some point in time. Power hitter, batting average is nothing spectacular, but 100-plus RBIs 3 years in a row, and over the past 5 years, 24, 28, 27, 30, and 25 home runs. We're looking at a first-base-type power bat, and again, just another name in a dynasty situation where you might want to stash him away, being that he's at the stage where either next year or the year after, I think the decision will be there where he can come this way.
Very nice. Yeah, so that's definitely one thing, you know, to check out in your dynasty leagues. Make sure you know your rules, especially if it is a startup. Oh. If you can draft these guys, I know on Fantrax they have just a huge player database if you draft on there. And, you definitely do not want to sleep on some of these guys, especially in Ohtani. You know, like you said, a generational talent. So make sure that if you are available to draft, any of these Asian players, that you factor that into your plans, because it is often worth it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I picked up, in at the time, my home league, I picked up Darvish, I think it was. I believe it was Darvish 2 years before he was available to come over. And just sat on him. The big problem that I, right now I'm faced with when looking at a lot of these Japanese players is most of the dynasty leagues I'm in have an exclusion clause that they have to have signed a major league agreement. And I think it's a personal thing just to screw me out of all my Japanese research. but what can I say? I don't make the rules. I just got to live with them. But I do totally agree with you, Nate. You know, if there's an opportunity to grab these guys and it's allowed in your rules, go out and stash them. You're looking at probably in some cases 2-3 years down the road, but 2-3 years down the road, you could have yourself one of a baseball player.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you take an Ohtani and he doesn't come over for even 2-3 years, what's the difference between that and, you know, picking up some guy in your rookie draft that's, you know, 18 years old, straight out of high school? You're going to end up sitting on him for 3, 4, 5 years, even before they're in the majors anyway. You just got to have patience, which is something that I did not have when I rostered Francisco Mejia for about 3 years and then gave up on him the year that he broke out and had a 53-game hitting streak. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
Ooh. No, it doesn't sound like you're bitter at all. I'm totally impressed. Most people would be rather upset to see a player of his caliber slip to the opposition. I commend you for that, Nathan. I really do.
Yeah. I've gone through a lot of stress balls over the year, Tim.
Not good.
Okay, so we're going to finish this off with a few favorite picks of yours from the draft and perhaps some least favorite picks as well. So let's start on the plus side. You know, we're positive folks here. So was there any picks that stood out to you either at the time of the draft or sort of looking back that you think was a really exceptional value?
Oh, that catcher in Cleveland, that kid. What's his name? Francisco? Well, you just mentioned him. Oh, I'm so sorry. That was
come
rude.
On.
That was rude. When I look at my picks, Julio Urias is a 96 off the board. I really like that pick. I believe in the kid. I know he's young. He's going to be on an innings limit for sure, but I really, really like what this kid brings to the table, and I think he's going to be a very, very good player. Here's a question for you, Nathan. Okay. Yon Mankata went in the third round, right? Mm-hmm. Roman Quinn went in the 16th round. Where's the value?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I would say just due to, I mean, at the very least, due to as much hype as around Mankata, I've got to say that Mankata has more value, you know, more value, I guess, as compared to the other. But, you know, the way you set it up, obviously, going much, much later in Roman Quinn, there's nothing wrong with that pick there. But
no, I realize that you're comparing apples and oranges because of the power potential with Mankata. But,
yeah.
You know, when you start looking at players like Roman Quinn, Manny Margot, that can get you those stolen bases. Maybe not this year, but next, I think, for sure. It leads me to believe sometimes the price one pays for the highly touted prospects might be a little bit steep, especially if you're looking at playing for the current year.
I do like Quinn. I own him on a Dynasty League myself. So I am definitely hoping for a big year and a lot of stolen bases out of him, because that's what I got him for. You know, like you said, not a ton of power, but you know, I think that Phillies team is going to sneak up on some people.
Yeah, I do as well. You know, when I look at the team construction overall, I really like Andrew McQuesson's team. You know, he was drafting, I believe, towards the back end of the first round, I believe. But he went in his first five picks. He went with Correa, Starling Marte, Miguel Sano, Gary Sanchez, and Bregman. And if you're looking at building a dynasty team, that's a heck of a way to start. You know, you've got power, you've got speed, you got a great young catcher with upside in Sanchez. Bregman, I think, is going to be a monster. Like, I really like what Andrew did with his first five picks. All young, upside, sky's the limit.
Yep, freaking Andrew. He was drafting the spot right in front of me. So him and I were going back and forth the entire draft talking about how, because I, you know, coming back around, I drafted in front of him. I took George Springer over Starling Marte, and I mentioned on the episode 98 that is recorded, but is not released as of the time that we're talking right now. I actually mentioned that I immediately regretted basically drafting Springer over Starling Marte, especially looking at my lack of stolen bases, you know, once the draft was much further down the road. But also Miguel Sano, especially this being an OBP league, obviously he's going to strike out. He's always going to strike out a lot, probably always going to have a pretty, you know, mediocre to poor batting average, but he just walks a ton. And, you know, other power sluggers like Chris Davis and Chris Carter, you know, they – Carlos Santana, too, you know, they get such a boost in OBP leagues. So, you know, really got to watch out for that. And like you said, yeah, Sanchez and Bregman, those are two of the premier young hitters in our game right now.
Well, yeah, I know when I'm looking at a dynasty team, even though I'm playing for this year and relatively short term, I'm still looking at guys in the 23 to 27 age group wherever possible, knowing that you've got a fairly long period of time to have them on your roster. And when I look at these five guys that Andrew drafted, that's a nice core. I like it a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, he really crushed this draft. Lewis Brinson was another guy that I wanted. I think I ended up taking Robles instead of him. And then even way down the road in the 18th round, Greg Bird with the Yankees, another guy that's going to draw a lot of walks and projects to have just a ton of power. You know, Cody Bellinger, same way, first base prospect with the Dodgers that I hope is soon a Minnesota Twin if Brian Dozier ends up out with the Dodgers. We will see how that goes. But did you have any pick that you really didn't care for before we wrap it up here?
Yeah, when I took a look, no, I think for the most part, you know, everybody did a good job. Everybody had different goals, I think, different strategies. But I really, really liked the way it unfolded. The only pick that I had trouble with was Jose Peraza in the fifth round.
Okay.
Yeah, that one sort of stuck out to me a bit. I can see why you would look at him anticipating that those big stolen base numbers, but I'm just not confident in Peraza that early, Nathan.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I actually had written down a couple picks that I didn't care for that we didn't have time to get to. Joe had to go on the last show, and so I didn't get to list my bust picks. And he was on there. He was on that list. He went to Allen at 68 overall, and especially in an OBP league, the guy just does not draw walks. So you're really, I mean, and he doesn't have any power either. He's just pretty much a rabbit. And at that point in the sixth round, it's just way, way too early for a guy with that kind of profile in an OBP league. And then
Go ahead, Nathan. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say a couple more. Allen, you know, the same guy, he admittedly said that Verlander was a drunk pick. He spent most of the time on vacation. And so there was actually a few of them that I didn't care for that he did. But I'm not going to give him too much crap because he was basically building a queue and setting it on auto pick the whole time so he didn't hold us up while he was busy, you know, sucking down margaritas on a beach in Cozumel or wherever he was.
Oh, yeah. Are you telling me that this guy actually didn't postpone his vacation to attend the great Nathan Dawkins dynasty draft?
No.
Like, he should have postponed his vacation. Like, I mean, that is, you know, that's just, I wouldn't invite him back in the future, Nathan. Like, really, that's almost rude, isn't it?
it's inexcusable, to be perfectly honest. Sort of like taking Max Scherzer over Clayton Kershaw at the 11th pick overall, but we had mentioned that on a prior podcast. I would say Eduardo Nunez at the 70th overall pick as well. Pretty early for me for him, even if he does steal. I mean, I would regress him probably to 20-25 stolen bases next year. I don't know if you love him heading into 2017, or do you think he was kind of like a one-year wonder?
Yeah, I'm thinking that when we look at his career numbers, the 2016 season will have the word outlier attached. How's that?
Yeah, never pay for a career year.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, and one final one that I'll mention, Tyler Austin. He got popped in the 13th round. Just not seeing it with him. The strikeout rate, really, really high. Just not sure if he's going to be able to cut it. And the Yankees have a ton of position prospects coming up, and I just thought that was way too early on Austin.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think what you've got is a backup first baseman. You got a fourth outfielder, and probably moving forward 200-250 at bats a year, especially when you look at the, you know, the pipeline in the Yankees system. Tyler Austin is not going to delay the arrival of any of these top prospects. And, you know, hey, I think he's going to be a nice little player in AL-only formats, but I don't see the long-term value there at all.
Yeah, he does. You know, he does at least draw some pretty decent walks, but yeah, you're looking at a pretty bad average with a really high strikeout rate. So, but that's enough hating for now. And I think we've already talked way longer than I had imagined. But once I get talking with you, Tim, I could just do it all night. But we have to let you go. So go ahead and plug the podcast and make sure that you let everybody know in our listening audience where they can find all your work and where we can listen to you.
Yeah, I'm hanging out at Prospect 361 every Sunday night at, what time we start here? 7 Central, 8 Eastern. Problems of multiple time zones. Rich Wilson and I have been chatting it up now for 6-7 years, and it is truly a pleasure. I look forward to my Sundays and talking baseball with Rich. And in addition to that, we've got the Prospect 361 Facebook page, and it is going great guns. We're having a lot of fun with it. Rich, all of his work from Prospect 361, as far as prospects are concerned, he's listing his top 10 right now by team. Great stuff. I've been very fortunate that Rich has allowed me the opportunity to do some rankings in addition to the waiver wire stuff I did last year. So a lot of good things happening at Prospect 361. In addition, you can find me at Patton & Company, where I'm a regular contributor. And I think that's about it. The only other thing I wanted to say was I want to thank you personally, Nathan, for allowing me the opportunity to play the Dynasty mock game. I had a lot of fun with it and appreciated it big time. And hopefully, sometime this spring, a group of us will be getting together in your backyard and having even more fun. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah. I mean, we are definitely indebted to you for partaking. We love having you, you know, on the show and having you partake in the drafts. And yeah, like you mentioned, I'm trying to bring the live draft back. I really miss it. I've never actually done a live in-person baseball draft. I've done them for football. Because obviously that's a more popular fantasy sport, so it's a lot easier to get a local bunch of guys, you know, together for a draft. And I've been on the, you know, fantasy football league for over a decade now, and we did live draft every year, and it's like the greatest day of the year. So what I want to do is bring that to baseball. And so if there is anybody in the entire Midwest region who wants to do a live draft with me and Tim, and whoever else wants to, you know, come draft live, I think we're gonna have a good old time. Just you know, get at Tim, if you know, at Timothy LMC on Twitter, or find him on Facebook. On the Facebook page, you can post something about it. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dawkins. You can talk to me there, also on Facebook. You can also email the show, thefantasyamateurs@gmail.com. I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. And we also have We're also on Twitter. The show is at Fantasy Amateurs. So there's a whole bunch of avenues to get a hold of us if you're, you know, we're in Bismarck, North Dakota. Forgot to mention that. Well, I am. Tim, you're up in Canadian land.
Yeah, but I'm not that far from you, Nathan. I think as the crow flies, it's only about 5 or 6 hours, eh? And you know what? For a live draft, I'll drive that 5-6 hours. It's worth it to me. When I first started playing this game, the first 10 years or so I was playing, I was in a league in Thunder Bay. And every year I'd pile into the car, drive the 3.5 hours into Thunder Bay, and I have to tell you, there is nothing in the world better than a live draft. You just can't beat it. It's a lot of fun, and anybody out there, within 5 hours, you have no excuse for not showing up, because we're going to have a fun time, Nathan.
Absolutely. And if you're worrying about accommodations, my wife is the general manager of a hotel, so she will arrange for you to, well, I mean, obviously it's not going to be free or anything, but you can get yourself a hotel room, and we can even get a conference room for the draft going on, so it should be a tremendous time. So anybody who is in the area, hell, if you're in Anchorage, Alaska, and you want to fly all the way down here, I don't really care. As long as you want to partake in it, we will be glad to have you. So just let us know. It should be a fun time. So Tim, again, thanks for joining us so much. Look forward to talking to you again in the future.
My pleasure, Nathan. Be well, and we'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Stick around. We're going to take a quick break and then talk with Jim Finch from FanRag and the Fantasy Assembly. All right, and joining us now on the Nasty Cast, Jim Finch. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Had a little taste of your weather over the weekend. We kind of got a couple inches of snow, went down to like 0 degrees with the wind chill factor. I know it's nowhere close to what you guys went through with a couple feet of snow, but and you had 50-degree weather like 4 days before, and it goes down to zero. Yeah, it's kind of chilly.
Oh, man, yeah. You do not know pain until you know North Dakota winter, my friend. We've got about 6 feet of snow on the ground right now, and wind chill has been hovering right around 30 below or so for quite some time. But thankfully, we're going to be going up the other way. Where all are you writing at these days? Because we're going to get into some of the guys that you've written about recently. Just tell all the people everywhere that they can find your work.
You can find me on fantasyassembly.com and also on fanragsports.com and also on Twitter at TheJimFinch.
And you can identify him because he is the brain.
Paul Hartman kind of gave me that one a few years ago when we first started. He's like, yeah, he's the brains behind the operation. It just sort of stuck, so I just kept it.
Oh, nice. I'm glad I know that now. I would have been too dumb to ask the history behind that. So we're going to talk about some of the guys that you've written about a little bit later. But first of all, let's go into this Dynasty League draft that we did. And thank you very much for partaking. And this was an OBP and Quality Starts League. And just kind of curious, going into a Dynasty startup draft, is there any sort of general strategy that you employ, whether it's hitters first, you know, extreme youth over, you know, a bunch of 30-year-old guys? Anything in particular that you try to target or avoid?
Overall, I usually try and go hitter heavy. I mean, with the first at least 5 or 6 picks, some pitchers are usually a dime a dozen. You get new guys coming up every year, producing out of nowhere, so you can usually find pitchers, but elite hitters, those guys are usually more in demand, so I try and stack mainly infield if I can early in the draft. Age, I try and keep, I'd say 30 or under for the early picks, but once you get to a certain point in the draft, you're just basically looking for quality and you're not really considering the age much.
Yeah, I hear you. I definitely echo the sentiments as far as the hitter over pitcher. I lucked out and wound up with Clayton Kershaw at 13, you know, but that is definitely an anomaly. Anybody else in the first round, even if it's Max Scherzer, I'm just not interested. I'm all about those hitters. You know, pitchers are just so volatile, too. Even without the whole Tommy John surgery thing, flying around the league. You know, year to year, there's so much up and down with them. It just is so much better to get that stable base of hitters. And that is exactly what you did. The first round, seventh pick overall is where you're, the seventh draft slot is where you're picking from. Nolan Arenado, you got to feel pretty good about that one. Francisco Lindor in the second round, and then David Dahl. What do you foresee out of David Dahl moving forward?
I can basically see him being a probably like a Carlos Gonzalez type player, at least a 2020, looking at 300 average. I wasn't really, when I picked him, I wasn't considering much of the on-base percentage. When I went and looked afterwards, I can probably foresee like a 350 on-base percentage. So easily a five-category player, provided he turns in everything we hope he could be. I mean, the Coors effect, worst case scenario, if he's not that great of a hitter, becomes that home field player that you like, and that should keep his value up enough to where if he's not a great overall player like Arenado, where he can hit a home and away, at least he'll have enough value to where you could trade him later. But for now, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that he can be that 2020 300 player that he's, you know, the pedigree says he can be.
Yeah, I loved all too myself. You know, near 15% swing strike rate is definitely not encouraging, but guy is not even 23 yet, so he's got time to work through that. And just having the buffer of Coors Field makes life so much easier. You know, even like Trevor Story, I mean, the guy could hit 240 if he played anywhere else, but just because he's in Coors, I mean, it's like you're looking at a legitimate 270 average. D. Gordon, then, is your next pick, the 54th overall pick in the fourth round. I feel like he would have gone quite a bit higher if this was a year ago. So what are your thoughts on D. Gordon?
Yeah, a year ago, he was, what, being taken in the second round. He was basically a poor man's Jose Altuve, or Altuve, however you pronounce that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 50 speed. He can at least steal 50 bases a year. He's good for 80, 90 runs. He can hit 300, and he gets hit with a PED suspension, and all of a sudden he just drops off everyone's radar. I mean, at one point, I probably would be like a lot of people and dismissed him, maybe pushed him further down in the draft, but considering the bounce backs we've seen from guys like Ryan Braun and Nelson Cruz, who've had same PED suspensions and come back and been pretty much the same player, I'm not discounting him at all. I mean, he came back last year, he had 30 steals over the last 79 games. You extrapolate that over a season, he's back up to his same total. He had almost 50 runs in those same 79 games, so he's just close to the same 100 runs scored. So you got two to three categories that everyone was looking for D. Gordon. It all comes down to, can he hit for average again? I mean, that basically comes down to the PEDs and the hard hit rate, which dropped and the soft hit rate went up. But he does have the speed to where he can still get on base, to where even if he's not hitting the ball as hard, he can still leg enough balls out to first and keep the run and stolen base totals up. Now, for our purposes, we're using on base percentage, so he is somewhat of a killer there, but those two categories alone, that can still make him at least a top five player in my mind.
Wow, yeah, especially the state of stolen bases these days, you know, they're so much more at a premium than they have been, especially as compared to, you know, home run power over the last couple of years. It is a little bit risky, like you said, as far as, you know, not a ton of hard contact out of him, so he's definitely slapped the ball on the ground and beat the throw to first. But yeah, once he's there, you guarantee he's taking second base, and I think in the fourth round, I am just fine with that value. Once you get on top of that, it gets a little chintzier just because, you know, like you said, the average might go down quite a bit. But he is a guy who eliminated his pop-up problem that he had earlier in his career, and he's been, you know, fantasy gold ever since that. So I can't knock you for that one. This next one, let's see. Well, we'll list off a couple of your picks here. Jackie Bradley Jr. in the fifth round. Todd Frazier in the sixth round, Carlos Santana in the seventh round, another one of the guys who is who gets a big boost in OBP leagues. So I like that one a lot. And then one of the steals of the draft, in my opinion, in the eighth round, and you wrote him up at pretty much at the same time as we were doing this, I believe, at the 114th pick overall in the eighth round, you snatch up Johnny Cueto to be your ace.
You know, a lot of people for, I don't know, going up until last year, a lot of people saw him as an injury risk, but he hasn't really been that much of an injury risk. He's had 200 innings for like four of the past 5 years. And since 2011, the guy's got a 2.73 ERA and a 1.08 whip. So, I mean, that's top 10 numbers right there. He's also got double-digit wins during that time. Walk rate just over 2 walks per 9, which ranks 34th out of 180, 200 starters. So the guy's – he's putting up top 10 numbers. The only thing Johnny Cueto is not good for is strikeouts. But overall, if you compare his numbers for his career to Steven Strasburg, he's actually better than Strasburg is within – basically every category except strikeouts, and yet Strasburg's being taken, what, like in the third, fourth round of most drafts, and Cueto's falling all the way down to the eighth or ninth round in ours. I mean, that's just ridiculous in my mind. And he's only 2 years older, too.
Yeah, Strasburg went off the board in this draft at pick number 62, so much, much higher, 3 rounds earlier than Cueto. I like it. It's especially getting those 7 really good hitters before, you know, even having to bother with a pitcher, that really solidifies your offense. And, I mean, like I said before, pitching is secondary in a dynasty startup. As far as I'm concerned, like you said, you know, pitchers kind of, I mean, the DeGroms of the world don't fall off trees, but you can pick them up and ride them to success. It's just a lot easier to find really good pitching. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to find really good hitters off the wire. And another guy who has basically pitched like an ace but never gets drafted like one, Masahiro Tanaka. You went back-to-back pitching with Johnny Cueto and Masahiro Tanaka. And then after that, you went with Josh Bell, which is the first like real – well, I guess David Dahl technically could be called a rookie. But you went youth again with Josh Bell for your first baseman. So you like his – do you think his power will develop long-term? Because that's the one thing that he really hasn't shown up in spades right now is the power.
I'm not sure if the power will ever show up. I can see him maybe being a consistent 20 home run hitter, but I'm not really counting on much more than that. But I look at his low Ks and high walks and the batting average, and it reminds me a lot of Joey Votto, and his contact basically a lot similar to Matt Carpenter before his like big power surge. So even if the power doesn't come around, he could be that number two, number three hitter that hits 300, maybe gets to 20 bombs, but will score 90 plus in the runs and the RBIs. So not the prototypical first baseman we're looking for. You keep your fingers crossed for the power, of course, but overall, I think he's just a great contactor.
I mean, you mentioned Joey Votto, and looking at that plate discipline, it is reminiscent. I mean, that's a lofty expectation to put on any first base prospect. But even just, you look what he did as a 24-year-old with the Pirates last year in 45 games. Let's see here, 21 walks and 19 strikeouts. That's amazing. Almost 14% walk rate to a 12.5% K rate. So yeah, like you said, if the power comes with that kind of profile, it's just a little bit of a bonus. So,
and if the power doesn't come, then he's like a number two hitter like Matt Carpenter was, in which case it's still a win in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see, you went with Tulowitzki in the 11th round. Clint Frazier, interested. I've never really been a Clint Frazier guy. You might get a little bit more hype now that he is with the Yankees. Of course, had to cut those beautiful flowing locks, but talk me into Clint Frazier. I know he's a bat speed guy, right?
Yeah, he's definitely got a lot of bat speed. He makes a lot of hard contact. Can definitely draw walks. His walk rate's 10%, around 10% in the minors. He's got a slight strikeout problem, but if he can keep it to the 20% rate where it was before he was traded to the Yankees, I think he should be all right. He's a good on-base percentage guy, and I can see a lot of comparisons to someone like Michael Brantley. I mean, here's a guy nobody really thought much of, but a 15-15 outfielder that can hit between 280 to 300. That's someone you can get in a two-hole for the lineup, maybe get 80, 90 runs out of him, a decent number of RBIs. So that's basically what I'm looking at. I'm looking at like a Michael Brantley type comparison, not the Brantley that broke out for like obscene numbers before he got hurt, but I figure like a 15-15 type player is, you know, what I'm counting on.
Yeah, and a player who is, you know, again with the OBP, that's a plus in this type of format. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that as far as a guy who's only 22 years old. So, you know, even if he comes up and struggles for a year or two, he's still going to have some shine on him just because he's so young in a dynasty league. I've never played in a dynasty league where just being young, plain and simple, even if you haven't been any good, isn't a premium. So moving on, we got James Paxton, went off the board next. He had a nice breakout season last year. And then Bradley Zimmer, another young outfielder that you popped at round 14, pick 204 overall. So you big on Bradley Zimmer?
Somewhat big on Bradley Zimmer. My main reason for taking him was I had nobody for my outfield. I knew I was going to wind up taking a bunch of older players later to fill in for 1 or 2 years till some of the younger guys developed. And Zimmer, I basically see as a poor man's A.J. Pollock. I mean, he's got enough power to hit 15 home runs. He's got good speed on him. There is a big strikeout concern with him, so I don't know if he'll be more than like a 250 hitter, but for the power and speed combinations, where he could possibly be in the lineup, I'm willing to take a chance on him. I mean, I took a few young outfielders like this just to see which one will pan out. He's not my number one outfield choice, but considering what was left, he was probably the best of what was there.
Yeah, we're getting to the point in the draft there at pick 204. All the really sexy names are gone. So yeah, just excuse me, to get a prospect with that kind of upside is nice. Like you said, with the big walk rates and the big strikeout rates to match. But you know, there's a lot of guys, especially in this batting climate, that strike out just a ton, you know, 25%+ of the time. And there's still good major league players, or good, especially good fantasy contributors. A lot of time you see that big strikeout rate combined with the big power. So, you know, that's I think it's a good calculated risk at this point in the draft.
Yeah, the strikeout rate was high, but he's been able to maintain at least a 250, 260 batting average somewhere around there to where even if the strikeouts don't come down, I'm confident he can make enough contact to at least be a viable major league player and good fantasy player.
And you also nabbed one of my personal favorite pitchers, and we don't have to talk about him too much. I just wanted to give you a pat on the back for drafting Brent Honeywell. I like that dude a lot. I've been following him ever since he was drafted with his crazy screwball, and looks like he's going to be getting a chance pretty soon. If not this year, then I would say definitely next year. And the good folks out there in podcast land can look through the rest of your team on the fantasyamateurs.com. We're going to post all the results out there. So before we wrap things up here, were there any picks, whether it's by yourself or by anyone else, that you loved or did? And let's give some love to somebody if you have any picks that stood out that just seemed like a really good value.
Well, the one pick, I'll take my own team for this one because we all love our own team at the end of season.
Yeah,
but Justin Bour, I think I took him, 20 or 21st, either one of those two rounds. But a lot of people are overlooking him. They dismiss him because he can't hit lefties. But if you play in a daily format where you can move him in and out of your lineup and have even an adequate backup to put in his place, he is a great player to own. I mean, he did miss some time, so his numbers were sort of deflated. He only had 15 home runs, maybe 40-something RBIs. But if you owned Brandon Belt, and I owned both of these players in one league, and I went back and I crunched the numbers, putting in all of Bohr's numbers and then just putting Belt's numbers in there for the days that Bohr was facing a lefty or he was just getting off. And at the end of the year, you'd have 25 home runs, 87 RBIs, and 80 runs scored. I mean, that's right in line with what guys like Adrian Gonzalez and Prince Fielder, Eric Hosmer did in 2015. Freddie Freeman, Todd Frazier did that in 2014. So you're looking at top 10 numbers from him. If you can pair him with even a mediocre backup first baseman. So if you play in daily formats, grab Bohr late, match him up with anyone. Even you can probably get Brandon Belt maybe around 15, 16 to 12 team league and grab Justin Bohr in round 20 and you'll have a top first baseman that everyone's grabbing in the first 3 or 4 rounds.
Yeah. You know, even in weekly formats, you know, this is a 15 team league. So That's a guy who you can start at a corner infield and feel pretty good about, you know, or a utility slot. And I it wouldn't surprise me either, you know, if he trended back up to – if he gets those – approaches 450 plate appearances like he did back in 2015 where he hit 23 bombs. You know, he's got a really good hard contact rate, 35%, a lot of pull power. So when he when he's out there, he's mashing taters. So, yeah, I'm on board with, you know, there are a couple guys like that that have their place in deeper leagues. And like you said, if you are in a daily format and you can combine him with, you know, someone else, you can just really make off like a bandit. So let's go on the flip side then and find somebody that you can hate on. Give me a pick that you didn't like.
I hate Rick Porcello. I don't even care what round he was taken in. I hate Rick Porcello. I mean, there's just so much hype put on this guy from winning the Cy Young Award. It's not even funny. I mean, if you look at his numbers, there's been like no change in his arsenal. His contact rate was up last year, which ranked in the bottom 10. If you look at even his FX data, there was no one pitch that stood out as being better to explain why he had the type of year he did last year. The batted ball data, he had the spike and fly balls. Mm-hmm. He had the third, even though with the spike and fly balls, he had a career best home run to fly ball ratio. The ground ball rate continues to drop. The line drive percentage was below 20%. And yet this guy turned in a 3.15 ERA Cy Young award winning year. I mean, the only thing that Rick Porcello did better last year or did differently last year was he got better results. He did nothing better. He changed nothing. He just had that career year, sort of like I think Phil Hughes did in, what was it, 2014, when he had the unbelievable walk rate and everyone propped him up on a pedestal.
Oh, God.
I'm getting that same feeling from Rick Porcello.
He really needed me with Phil Hughes there. I'm a Twins fan, so, like, getting him and having to deal with that mess. Good Lord. Thank God we got a new regime in there. But, I have also a personal hatred for Rick Porcello, so you're not going to get any argument out of me here. When we did a 10-team AL-only league for the podcast, I ended up drafting Rick Porcello, and I had him for that one, it was 2015. Yeah, I had him for the first half where he was just absolutely god-awful. He ruined my ERA for the entire year, and then I dropped him, and as soon as I dropped him, he was good again. So it drove me absolutely up the wall. So I will forever hate him. I can see, like you said, you know, if people want to point to the pop-up rate and say that, you know, maybe that's a skill that he's – I don't care. I'm not drafting Rick Porcello either. So
Not even the pop-up rate. I mean, even his BAPIT was 267, so you're getting more luck and regression possibilities there.
Yeah. As far as I'm with you, everything points down. I really hope that people reach for him. They just look at the 315 ERA from last year. I mean, if he's being drafted even as like a number two, I mean, his K per nine is 7.63 last year. It hasn't been above 8 for, what, his whole career? So you can't even just rely on the strikeouts. So. But with that, we're going to let you go, Jim. I appreciate your time. Thank you for drafting with us. We will be glad to welcome you back in if we do the same thing again next year. So we'll check out your stuff at FanRag and at Fantasy Assembly. And if you want to dish out your Twitter handle one more time, because people should be following you, because you retweet all the good stuff that you and your cohorts work on.
On Twitter, it's The Jim Finch. It's amazing how many Jim Finches there are in the world, so I had to put The Jim Finch because I'm the only one that matters, apparently.
You are the
Jim Finch. At least in my mind.
That's right. The Jim Finch. All right. All right. Have a good one. Thanks for joining us today.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And now joining us for the, I think, maybe third time?
Yep.
Sweet. I nailed it. writer from Roto World and the Dynasty Guru, of course, Nick Duran. Welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks, Nate. Glad to be here.
Yes, and I thank you for participating in the Dynasty mock draft that we did, which was a lot of fun. And we're gonna slam right into that and then get to some of the guys that you have been writing about a little bit later. We're going to start right off. You're drafting out of the fifth slot, and you went with Jose Altuve there. Can't go wrong. Actually kind of feels like gold, honestly, getting him at number five.
Yeah, I mean, you got to love getting him at number five. And he's a five category player, good in every category. He's going to be way above average in every stat. And I especially like being a high batting average or on base percentage player in the first round, just because, you know, I feel like I can make up the other stats just by paying attention all year and using up every game played and just really being on top of things. But once you get behind in batting average, it's just very hard to dig out of that. So I like to make my first two, three picks a good batting average, or in this case, on base percentage, high in that category before I make sure I don't get buried in that category.
Yeah, I hear you. Are you worried at all about how the stolen bases fell off for him last year? The first half he was 23 for 26, and the second half he was only 7 for 14. Are you worried about that? It seemed to pretty much coincide with him slotting down in the three hole as opposed to leading off every game.
Well, I mean, it is a concern, but not really. I think he's going to steal a lot of bases. I mean, maybe not quite as many, but even if it's only 20-25 this year, it's still, with the home runs, batting average, just, you know, being 100 RBIs, 100 runs scored. Yeah, and you can't go wrong with Jose Altuve.
Yeah, it's, you know, in recent years I've been pretty optimistic on this as far as projecting him for, you know, 40, 50, you know, upwards of 60 steals, maybe not that quite aggressive, but yeah, I definitely would have a hard time after last year's second half. I don't know if you can expect too much more than 30-35, but like you said, I don't think he's going to stop stealing by any means.
No, yeah, I wouldn't expect anything like 40 or 50 anymore. No, I mean, generally players, even just from the aging aspect, are going to gradually decline in the stolen bases, but yeah, moving him down three hole in the lineup, that's going to affect it also. So maybe we won't get that many, but he's still going to be a big plus in that category.
Yep, and you got to have the steals early on. They really have evaporated over the last couple of years. Although the next pick, I guess he has started chipping in with the steals sort of more than I really ever expected. Xander Bogaerts definitely shoring up that middle infield real fast. I guess I'll ask you, since that's how you went, are you a position scarcity guy? Like, did you want to target specifically middle infielders as opposed to outfielders or anything? Or are you just going, are you just kind of going for the best overall value, best overall player early on in drafts?
Well, early on, the first few rounds, I'll definitely go for the best overall player, the best value you can get. But when it comes to drafting, I am very big on drafting only hitters early rounds. Okay. I don't take any pitchers at all. I mean, there's a lot of people that are like that, but I'm probably an extremist in that regard. Yeah, but basically, like in this draft, you'll notice that I don't think I drafted a pitcher at all until all of my offensive slots were filled.
Yeah, you definitely take that to an extreme. And we actually touched on that with Jim Finch earlier on in the show, about how, you know, both of us are on board with definitely shoring up the hitting before you start to venture into the pitching. But yeah, you definitely took it farther than either one of us did. Robbie Ray in the 13th round?
Yeah, I think, was he my first pitcher? Yeah, he was. But you want to talk about him now? Or?
Oh, sure, since we brought him up, and then we can sort of circle back up to some other guys.
Yeah, he's kind of one of my I may have taken him just a little bit early in this draft, but I wanted to make sure that I got him just because I've been writing about him and been pimping him all season, even though he had a very crappy year last year. He had a terrible ERA. Like, what was his ERA? It's 4.9. And but his luck stats were really terrible. I mean, it's just very unlucky. And his strikeout rate is out of this world, and that's the reason why I drafted him. I mean, he had the 21st best strikeout rate in history, not just in the league last year, but the 21st best strikeout rate than anybody's ever had. And there's some lofty names in there, so basically all Hall of Famers that have ever struck out that many or more batters. I'm not expecting him to obviously be that good, but When a guy's got a skill that's that extreme, you got to go after him. If you can get him in the middle to late rounds of a draft, heck yeah, I'm going for him, especially when he's only 24, 25 years old.
Yeah, you got to love that K rate for sure. 11.25 K per nine last year. And yeah, like you said, he definitely did get pretty unlucky. An inflated home run per fly ball rate, 15.5%. And even if you just look to his FIP, I mean, a 3.76 over a run lower than that ERA, mm-hmm. you know, that's one way to do it, you know, is just to bet on the Ks and then hope the rest regresses. It does seem like the home runs were just sort of ludicrous last year. So
yeah, I mean, basically, if you make all of your early picks hitters, you're going to have to scramble around for some unconventional pitching, and that's basically what I did in this draft. Take guys like Robbie Ray as my first pitcher that I got. I mean, everybody else has already got all the good pitchers by that point. I think I took him in the 13th round. So, and that's being able to fill up all my offensive slots early. It allows me to kind of take some chances on some pitchers later, maybe get some guys that most people wouldn't be going after. And Robbie Ray definitely fits into that category. So he's my shot at an ace.
Yeah, you got more cojones than I do, man, because I don't think I could wait that long before taking a pitcher. I think, you know, I managed to get Kershaw at 13, but that was just pure luck. I mean, other than that, I'd have a hard time waiting past the fourth or fifth round. You know, I just don't feel good not getting one ace. But I can definitely see where you're coming from because, like I said, I definitely go hitting heavy first. And pitching, you know, it's a lot easier to come into season by season. There are guys that sort of materialize out of nowhere a lot more than batters. So, and then the next guy, Michael Pineda, he's sort of a similar vein.
Exactly. I mean, everything I just said about Robbie Ray applies to Michael Pineda also. Excellent strikeout rate. Very unlucky on his luck stats, like batting average on balls in play, his home run rate, strand rate. Very unlucky. Things are going to improve on those luck stats. And you once you've got that strikeout rate, I mean, it's very rare for a guy to have a high strikeout rate for a long period of time and not end up with excellent results in the long run. So if you just believe in that strikeout rate, I think you can't go wrong. I mean, you may not be every single time that it's going to pay off, but the vast majority of time it's going to.
Yeah, it's a calculated risk for sure. We could circle back up around, let's see, the fourth round, then you took, of course, sticking with the hitters, Kyle Seager. Slow and steady Eddie there. But then Kyle Schwarber in the fifth round, he's sort of one of the more hotly debated players. Yeah, well, he was last year too, but heading into this year.
I believe in the bat. I mean, even if he stays in the outfield, I think he's going to be an early round pick, you know, perennially in redraft leagues just because of the bat.
Yeah.
I mean, I really believe he's going to hit for power and average. And but I also think that he's going to maintain catcher eligibility, I believe. And that's where a lot of the debate lies, is people think he's not going to. But I don't think he's going to be an every catcher, but I think he'll catch enough to maintain eligibility, at least in most seasons, kind of like an Evan Gattis type.
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah, I believe they're going to throw him out in left field from what I've been hearing so far. I also heard rumblings that Joe Maddon is going to bat him leadoff.
That I really like a manager willing to do that. Not too many managers would do that.
Yeah, I suppose it gives him a little leeway, the fact that he just won the World Series for the Cubs. he has pretty much free reign to do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Yeah, he's done a lot of crazy things over the years, and 99% of the time they've turned out like gold.
Yeah, I will say I'm not as optimistic on him catching enough games moving forward to maintain eligibility, but either way, I do think that he is going to be, like you said, a pretty highly drafted player. So for fantasy, you know, if he doesn't have the catcher eligibility, then obviously that does knock his value a little bit. But still, in the fifth round of a 15-team league, I don't have any problem at all. And
even if he doesn't get catcher eligibility, I mean, if he's just an everyday left fielder, I mean, he's going to play 160 games a year. If he were a catcher, he's only be playing like 125, 130 games a year. It's what most catchers do. So, I mean, just getting the extra playing time when you get a bat of his caliber, that makes up for losing the catcher eligibility to some degree.
Well, that's true. Well, 160 games, you must think that he's going to hit lefties then, too.
Yeah, I think he's going to be an all-around hitter. I think he's going to be, you know, maybe not as good as Rizzo or Bryant on the Cubs, but I think he's going to be, you know, an all-star level hitter, yeah.
All right. Let's see. I think I failed to mention Xander Bogaerts and Brian Dozier were your second and third rounders. So yeah. Sounds like at this point Dozier probably not getting dealt. If he does get moved, are you downgrading him at all?
Not really. I mean, I wouldn't expect him to hit 40-plus home run again, even if he stays in Minnesota. But, you know, he's a guy that produces in every category. Again, he's going to fill up the stats. I mean, he may not lead the league in anything, but he's up there among, you know, that second tier of players across the board. And that's the kind of guys I like. I don't like to go after guys that are just like one or two categories. I like to get guys that are good in every category, and he fits that bill.
Yeah, and also in the OBP format, Brian Dozier, along with Kyle Schwarber, both get big bumps. So let's see. We got Jonathan Lucroy, a for-sure catcher, in the sixth round. Dansby Swanson in the seventh round. What do you foresee from Dansby Swanson in the coming years?
I don't expect a whole lot this year. I think he'll be like an average major league shortstop probably this year, maybe a little bit better. But, you know, he's so young, he's not even anywhere close to his prime yet. And this is being a dynasty league, I expect him to grow into eventually being one of the top 3, 4, 5 shortstops fantasy wise in baseball. And getting a guy like that in the seventh round, I think is pretty good. But also a guy like him, I think may have more trade value than actual real life value, at least for the next year or two. So if I get a guy like him, I'm probably going to be looking to trade him, especially because I've already got Xander Bogaerts at shortstop. So, he's the guy that if we were going to actually play this league, I would be looking to trade, because I think I could get more for his more value out of him in a trade.
Yeah, we brought that up with Yoan Moncada as well. Like, even if he struggles for, you know, obviously he went in the third round, so he was much more expensive, and he's got a ton of hype and everything. But, you know, these young guys, when they come up, they're worth a lot. If they don't, even if they don't give you a huge stat line right off the bat, still trade them away if you're in the midst of a run for first place and get some good pieces to help you finish with that flag.
Exactly. I mean, with Yoan Moncada, if I had him, I would definitely trade him. I mean, I think he's a great prospect. He's likely a really good player, but I mean, his value right now is just over the moon in the trade market. And if you look back, yeah, he may be the best prospect in baseball right now. But if you look back over the last 10 years or so and look at all the number one prospects in baseball, it's not a pretty picture. No. I mean, you're looking at guys like Delmon Young, Jason Hayward, Jerickson Profar, Byron Buxton. I mean, those people that owned them in fantasy leagues back when they were the number one prospect in baseball would have been well served to trade them. I mean, because you got the number one prospect in baseball, you can name your price in most dynasty leagues. And so if you look back over the history, it's not, you're much better off trading those type of guys than actually keeping them.
Yeah, I definitely don't disagree that would be a wise idea. I mean, you can get the moon for Moncada right now.
Yeah.
Although I'm not giving up on Buxton yet. I'm not. He's still really young. I think 22, 23 years old. So.
Yeah, I'm not giving up on him either. But just saying that his value right now is a lot less than it was 2 years ago at this time.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he was the number one pick. You could have, and people did trade him for, you know, all-star level players, and you couldn't do that right now.
Oh, yeah. Him. Yeah, for sure. Now, he's just getting BJ Upton comps as a ceiling. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a good buy candidate right now, I think.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, at the very minimum, you're looking at a guy who is a gold glove caliber center fielder who's arguably the fastest player in baseball right now. I know he's StatCast recorded his first to third times were even better than Billy Hamilton's.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yep. So he's got, you know, all he has to do is get on base, and he's going to steal you a ton of bases.
Yep. And he's got power, too. I've seen him up close and personal in some spring training games, and I was really impressed. I mean, he's got the complete package. So he deserved to be the number one overall prospect, and so far it hasn't worked out. But, yeah, I would not give up on him at all.
Agreed, yeah. And I think, well, I hope anyway, with this new Twins regime, they're going to get some different batting coaches in there, because it just seems like one constant with every prospect that comes up through the Twins is they just have absolutely no plate discipline. They have no pitch recognition. They swing at everything, and Buxton is definitely one of those guys, so hopefully that's something that he can improve on. But a guy that you mentioned was Jason Hayward, and you actually drafted him in the 12th round. And I watched the video recently how they're reworking swing in the off season. Seems like something that he would have been well served to do several years ago. But are you still optimistic on Hayward moving forward, or are you afraid that he's going to be a fourth outfielder?
Well, I don't think he's going to be a fourth outfielder, but yeah, I wouldn't have superstar expectations for him anymore. But I think he's going to be a quality player, and you know, getting him in the 12th round, I think, is a nice steal.
Yeah, I you know, and he walks a lot too. So again, OBP league, can't argue with that. You drafted just a ton of interesting players. I want to talk about all these guys, but we just don't have time for all of them. But I do want to get your take on Yasiel Puig, who you took in the 10th round. What do you see from him in the next coming years?
Well, his value has gone down the toilet right now, but I think people are kind of overreacting to the immaturity issues. I mean, he lost a lot of playing time last year because of that. But when he was actually on the field, his numbers were pretty good. I mean, he was an above-average hitter when he was playing. He wasn't the superstar that, you know, people thought he was going to be. I mean, 2-3 years ago, he was a first-round pick in Dynasty Leagues. So getting him in the 10th round now is a big savings, and there's a lot of question about how much playing time he's going to get this year. But I think the talent is still there. I mean, this is a guy that can hit for power, steal bases, hit for average. He can do everything, and he's still only, 25 years old?
So very young, yeah.
I mean, there's guys. I mean, George Springer was 25 years old when he first played in the major leagues. So, I mean, Puig is the age of that a lot of top prospects are when they reach the major leagues, and he's still that young now. And he's already shown how much talent he's got. So, I'm not giving up on him at all just because of the maturity issues that's costing playing time. I think that'll work itself out. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him put up several All-Star seasons.
Interesting. Yeah, I think this is one player, at least for me, where my outlook for him differs dramatically between redraft and dynasty. Like you said, I mean, it's he's sort of a reclamation project at this point in a dynasty league, but you own him forever, so you know you've got all the time in the world. Whereas with a redraft league, you want him to put up your stats this year, and I just don't know.
Yeah,
you know, it seems like something that he's going to have to sort of work on to better himself, and that he could probably be that superstar someday. But I don't know that I would bet that it would be this year.
Right, I totally agree with that. Yeah, if this were a redraft league, I wouldn't take him in the 10th round. That's for sure. It'd be more like, I mean, probably 15th, 16th round at least before I'd take him in a redraft league.
Absolutely. We're going to move down to the 17th round. This has always been sort of, Matthew Berry would call it his kryptonite. Like, I just can't quit the guy. That's Drew Hutchison going out to Pittsburgh now. He's going to be under the tutelage of Ray Searidge. So,
that's exactly why I drafted him.
Okay.
I mean, Searidge has turned around a lot of pitchers that had a lot less talent than him. Mm-hmm. I mean, J-Hap was terrible for a number of years.
Yep.
And then you got Edson Volquez. And I mean, there's a lot of pitchers that have gone to Pittsburgh and just revitalized their careers under Searidge's tutelage. And I think Hutchison, I think he's got a lot of talent, great stuff. So I fully expect him to be maybe not a very good fantasy pitcher, but definitely a good fantasy pitcher with the possibility for very good.
Yeah, and he's got huge strikeout upside too, so that's a bonus. If you just, you know, in the move out to PNC Park, should be huge. Mm-hmm. Guy who's given up a ton of home runs in the past, especially last year, so Yeah, he's going to be one of my big sleepers this year, I feel like. So, let's see. We're running short of time, so I want to get – you're a Reds fan. You've followed their farm system for some time now, and you've written about them as well. So out of all of their prospects, which one is your favorite?
Well, the one that I think – most people may not have heard of, and yet I think has a chance to be a really good major league player, is Shedrick Long. As a second baseman, he's played in high A last year, low A and high, tore up the league, both of those are pitching friendly leagues, but so his stats may not blow you away when you first look at it, but when you compare it to the other players in his league, his stats were like probably in the top five or six in each league. And this is a guy that could make some top 100 lists this year, this spring. But if he doesn't, he should. But this is a guy, second base, another middle infield eligibility. He can hit for power, steals bases. I mean, you're talking probably 20 home run power, 25, 30 stolen base speed, and hit for a good batting average. So, I mean, and this is a prospect that you can probably get. You can probably just pick him up. I mean, because nobody knows who he is right now. So
I had never heard of him before, Nick. You just dropped some knowledge on me. I even thought when you said the name Shedrick Long, I thought you meant Cedric, and you just turned into Sean Connery for a second.
Shedrick Long, he's my favorite prospect.
But no, it is Shedrick. Very peculiar name. So
he goes by Shed, I believe, most of the time.
Oh, that's so much better than Shedrick. Oh man, that is awesome. That's a great deep sleeper right there. I will jot that down. So real quick before we go, I wanted to ask you whether it's on your team or someone else's team, the favorite pick of yours, or at least one that, you know, seemed like a little bit of a bargain for where the player went. I'm going to ask you for a bargain first, and then a pick that you didn't like so much. So let's start off with a pick in this draft that just really seemed like a good value to you.
Well, I chose Odubel Herrera. I'm trying to figure out exactly where it was that he was drafted.
Oh, mercy. Yeah.
But he's a player that I think is kind of criminally underrated right now. I think possibly because he was never a top prospect. I believe he was a Rule 5 pick is the only reason he even got an opportunity in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that he's got a surprising amount of power, speed, batting average. He's a guy that's going to contribute across the board. And I think is a guy that is undervalued in the vast majority of leagues out there.
Nice. All right. How about on the flip side then, a pick that you didn't like so much?
Well, normally I would say whoever drafts the first closer.
Okay, yeah.
But in this draft, it was actually pretty good that nobody drafted a closer until the seventh round. So that's pretty good. Usually you see closers going early.
Yeah.
But in dynasty leagues, drafting closers in the set draft is a huge mistake, I think, because the vast majority of closers, even the best closers, only last 1, 2, 3 years as a closer. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, guys like Mariano Rivera are rare, and it's in predicting which ones are going to last that long is impossible. So closers are something you can pick up, many of them, during the season. So I just think drafting closers is not a good idea. But the next player that I would not have drafted as early is Michael Franco.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Joe that drafted him in the fourth round. And to me, that's a huge reach for Franco. I just don't believe that he's going to be, you know, an all-star sort of player. And in the fourth round, that's the kind of player that you have to get in a startup draft. So he would be the guy that I think was the biggest reach in the draft.
Interesting. Okay. I wouldn't have stood out to me so much. He's got a fair combination of youth and still some upside. Managed to hit 25 home runs last year, but does not walk a ton. I will say that for an OBP. But I did want to mention too, on your point about closers, I totally agree with that. that is the one thing really that you can continuously churn and burn is the closer. You know, as long as you're active on the waiver wire, you can pick those guys up. If you're not competing, then you can sell them off to the, you know, whoever needs saves and is competing for great prospects or other players or what have you. But yeah, as long as you're on top of your game, then it's definitely saves are the best or the easiest thing to come into. Of course, the downside is then occasionally you chase saves in the Phillies bullpen or the Colorado bullpen or something like that, and it ends up being a net negative. But for the most part, I definitely echo your sentiments in waiting for a closer.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Nick, that's about all the time we have for on this fabulous episode. I want to thank you for mock drafting with us. It was a pleasure, and talking with us as well. So before we get out of here, let all the people know where they can find you on the interwebs.
Well, once again, I write for RotoWorld and also thedynastyguru.com. And on Twitter, you can find me at BlazingFastball, and that it's Blazing Fast BA11 because some other jerk already had it with the L's at the end. So it's Blazing Fast BA11.
Have you reached out to this Blazing douchebag yet? Say, give me the Twitter handle.
No, I haven't. Yeah, I probably should, but I don't know. He'd probably want like $5,000 for it or something.
One of those old Twitter handle squatters. All right, Nick. Thanks again for joining us. That is all for this week, folks. If you want to, again, if you want to look at all these draft results, go to thefantasyamateurs.com. We have everything posted there. And next episode, next week, is the century mark for us. It's episode 100, so look out for that coming to your ear holes soon. Until next time, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.